Welcome back to Slay Away, the podcast where we discuss the inspiration behind your favorite horror films, lore, gore, and every kill in between. I'm your host, E.L. King. This week, I'm excited to have Paul from Fossil Games joining me by the campfire to chat about our mutual love of 80s slasher movies, one of my favorite 8-bit horror games, Camp Sunshine, and the upcoming Sunshine Manor coming out this October to all gaming platforms. Paul, welcome to Slay Away. So we got connected because I'm a huge fan of Camp Sunshine, obviously. And this is an indie horror game that Fossil Games developed and published that was released in 2016. Can you tell everyone more about the game for anyone listening that doesn't know about this fantastic game with tons of horror Easter eggs that honestly I continue to gush about every time I play it?
Yeah, it's a bit crazy. So yeah, Camp Sunshine is basically a love letter to 80s slasher movies. And it was a game we started to make without kind of an idea of we were going to sell it or actually, you know, put a real game out there. It was more just, can we make a game that is better than Friday the 13th on the NES? And that's kind of how it started. And then we wrote a story surrounding it, and then we started to write music, and then we started to speak to people who make horror movies and put their Easter eggs into the game, and it all kind of spiraled way out of control, and now I'm here.
Jez is a normal teenager looking forward to summer camp, the kind of camp millions of teenagers attend every year. Little does he know that tonight the camp will be turned into a bloodbath by a force from beyond the grave. From two lifelong fans of 80s horror movies comes a game filled with enough pixelated horror to turn your blood cold. Solve devious puzzles. Meet the camp residents. Discover the mystery hidden within Camp Sunshine. Will you make it through the night? Isaac Illerman find you.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And I have to say, spoiler alert, horror fans, one of my favorite Easter eggs from this game, even though it's a horror film that I'm not a big fan of, was when I walked into one of the cabins and I saw the three silver shamrock masks from Halloween 3 Season of the Witch just sitting on this like curio cabinet table, and just like immediately I'm unable to stop myself from playing that song from the Silver Shamrock commercial film or the commercial from the film in my head. It just like continued to play, and I'm like just picturing it in my head with the little kid sitting in front of the television.
Oh man, how can you hate Halloween 3? It's awesome.
I mean, I don't hate it. It's just one of my least favorite horror films, and more so despite the fact that I understand now that they were trying to pivot Halloween into being an anthology series. At the time that I first watched it, I didn't love it. And it's funny, I was just chatting with someone the other day about the Silver Shamrock song, and we were definitely experiencing quite a bit of nostalgia about it. The film came out before I was born in, 1982, I want to say. So I probably didn't see it until the late 80s, honestly. Okay, honestly, let me just terrorize you with this for a second here, okay?
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween.
Okay, I didn't play the entire thing, so you wouldn't all hate me after this episode, but honestly, if having that song stuck in your head doesn't strike fear into your hearts, I don't know what will. So Camp Sunshine has a lot of really, really good Easter eggs, as we mentioned, and has a love letter to 80s slasher films. It's a bit of a side quest to find and identify all of them. I like to say proudly, I was able, as an avid horror fan, to immediately identify what each one was. But also, one of the really cool things about the game is that there are a lot of really neat pixelated like 80s film posters all over the camp as well that you can find. And those were a little bit harder to figure out because they're pixelated and the game view is top down, but definitely a cool challenge for you as well.
Yeah, we spent way too much time.
We touched on this a little earlier, but the next game release coming up from Fossil Games is Sunshine Manor, which I'm really excited about. I actually backed the game on Kickstarter due to being such a fan of Camp Sunshine. I'd love to hear more about how your team of two at Fossil Games went about getting these games released. And I did see that you do have an additional publisher for Sunshine Manor this time around. So yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about, you know, how these two games came to be?
Yeah. Yeah. So Camp Sunshine released and it did way better than we thought it would. To be honest, we were quite surprised and quite taken back by it. And while we were writing Camp Sunshine, we kind of wrote way too much and wrote a backstory for pretty much everything, including how it all happened at the camp, what's really going on. And we answer all of that in Sunshine Manor. So, yeah, we kind of go back. So Sunshine Manor is a prequel to Camp Sunshine, and it explains how Camp Sunshine kind of was founded and how it began. And it's pretty gruesome.
I'm really interested in exploring the origins of Camp Sunshine and Sunshine Manor. I keep seeing all of the social posts about the game. So everyone be sure to follow Fossil Games on Twitter to keep up with them. I really can't express how excited I am to play this game. Rarely do I anticipate a game like I'm anticipating this one, but I won't be able to play it until later this fall when it releases in October.
Yeah. So it's going to be a little while before it comes out. We're working on it at the moment, and we think we're ahead of schedule at the moment, but we're aiming for October or just before.
It was a normal Halloween for Ada and her friends. That was until they decided to stop by the old Aitken house, and their night of fun turned into a night of terror. Trapped inside the mansion, your friends taken by an evil force lurking in the shadows, ready to strike. Make your way through devilish dungeons, across perilous paths, banish demons that want to trap your soul forever. Uncover the secrets of the mansion, save your friends, and maybe make a few new ones along the way. Can you escape Sunshine Manor? Coming soon.
Oh my gosh. So based on the trailer alone, Sunshine Manor is sure to be another awesome 8-bit horror game with an incredible soundtrack. I can't wait to play. And actually, I misspoke earlier because Camp Sunshine is a 16-bit blood-soaked horror game, while Sunshine Manor is going to be an 8-bit horror game. So there you go. Corrected. Sign, sealed, delivered. All that good stuff. But I want to dive into asking Paul some questions where we can kind of, you know, wax poetic about our love of horror. So Paul, can you tell me a little bit about an experience that really has shaped your love of horror?
Definitely. I have two. The first is sitting with my dad watching The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, and I couldn't have been any older than 8. And my dad getting really excited when all the gruesome parts kind of happened. And then a few years later, they found a copy of Nightmare on Elm Street 3. and they gave me a copy of that and just let me watch it in my room. And I thought, I've found what I'm into. This is it. And I think I wore the tape out in the end because it's just, it was too good. And that was it. That's how I got into horror.
I have very similar origin stories about growing up and watching horror films with my grandmother. And I think that The Fly and A Nightmare on Elm Street were some of the first like gorier films that I saw as a kid. And while they scared me, I also totally loved them. And I was a huge fan of science fiction and monster movies. Do you have a favorite monster movie or movie monster?
I'd probably say it had to be The Wolfman. If we're going kind of classic Universal, werewolves have always been a thing that's just, they're brilliant. They're fantastic. There's American Werewolf in London is one of the greatest films ever made. And the kind of all that is just, there's just something about it that gets me going. As long as they kept the Bad Moon Rising for the first transformation theme.
I'm a big fan of werewolves in general. I don't have a particular favorite out of the werewolf films I've seen, but I do recall the first horror film that I remember watching was the screen adaptation of Stephen King's novel Cycle of the Werewolf, which became Silver Bullet in 1985. And he also wrote the screenplay for that. That was actually what got me into horror as a kid. I still really love werewolves as, you know, creatures, and the creature from that film in particular. I felt like the practical and special effects were really well done. And I'm curious, have you recently rewatched any of the films that you grew up with as a kid?
So in October just gone, I did a horror movie, a classic horror movie every day. And I think I'm slightly odd, but I watch them to go to sleep too, because they're kind of comfort food. they're safe and I can watch them. I know what's kind of going on. So, yeah, basically exploring mostly kind of ghost stuff and more recent stuff. But, yeah. Halloween is kind of one movie a day is what I tend to try and do.
I do the exact same thing, and I love how you're talking about, oh, it's like comfort food to go to sleep to, and now I feel old because I do the exact same thing and I watch different horror film every day through October. And for me, it's like I try to watch something that I haven't seen before, but I always have my couple of classics that I go back to during that season. Yeah, I actually did the Nightmare on Film Street 31 Days of Horror challenge that they were doing. They were posting on social, and basically you would tag them and let them know what horror film you were watching during the season. So it was a lot of fun, and I planned it out. I mapped out the whole thing. Basically, there was a theme for every day. So I tried that out and tried to like match a film to the theme. I came up with some interesting ones. I'm sure I have my list around here somewhere. But yeah, I'm kind of curious, for you, Paul, like what is, so the first horror film that you remember watching, what did you say that was?
I think it was The Fly.
When you look back at the transformation scenes in The Fly now, how do you perceive them differently from your first impressions of the film and that experience from when you watched it as a kid?
I don't think I feel any different at all. I think it's because in that film, because the build up takes, you know, pretty much the entirety of the film to kind of get to, you're with them for the whole ride. But the sense of excitement that's kind of, oh my God, you know, this is happening, is I think it's still the same now, you know, 30 something years later.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. I think obviously that initial scare isn't quite the same for me. When you see the creature, but it's still, when you look at it now, I think it holds up. I think a lot of things from the 1980s hold up in terms of the makeup and the practical effects. There's a lot of computer generated effects now, so things are very different, and they feel different. It's like you can, I don't know, you can tell more when something.
You can definitely tell.
And it's I don't know, I'm going back, like I just love practical effects. I think that's why I always go back to films from the 80s or even before the 80s, where you just had to do that stuff on your own and make it up as you went. And Some of the concoctions that were used to make certain types of effects were really interesting, and that'd be something to explore a little further. I just recently watched In Search of Darkness, Volume 1, the like 4.5 hour. The 4.5 hour kind of interview with different folks and going through every single year of the 1980s. And it was super interesting. Did you happen to catch it as well? It took me like a week to watch the whole thing. So long.
Yeah, I've watched it and devoured it in pretty much one go. It was glorious. I know they're doing the second part, aren't they? That's coming out soon for the 90s, I think it is.
So I actually did my homework here, and In Search of Darkness Part 2 is a 4 hour long plus. It's longer than 4 hours. Sequel to In Search of Darkness, which apparently is the most celebrated horror documentary in history. And this one has 15 new interviewees and like 40 plus returning other interviewees. And it is, in fact, going to be even more 1980s horror. So I'm really, really excited to watch it once I can get my hands on it. So I know you're going to love it, Paul. So if you had to choose one horror, like villain or slasher, movie monster, demon, etc., that you would absolutely never want to have to face down, who would it be and why?
Michael Myers. Without a shadow of a doubt, it would be Michael Myers. There is just something about the kind of revenant nature of him that he's just, Jason's great, he's scary, he's slow, he's, you know, super strong and can come back from the dead, but there is something about Michael Myers where it's just not explained, and the mystery surrounding him is just is far worse than any other slasher.
Yeah, so Michael Myers is just this unstoppable force, and it's interesting. Yeah. Because it's something that Loomis continuously hints to throughout the film. And I think Rob Zombie in his remakes tried to explain it, even though the first time I watched the Rob Zombie films, I didn't like them. I had to rewatch them to kind of be like, okay, it's like, you know, a little bit different, but it created this like very sympathetic character behind the Michael Myers ominous, menacing, sinister aesthetic that was set up by Carpenter in 1978. And I was just kind of like, I don't know how I feel about that. I like the mystery behind the character. And that's a lot scarier to me than trying to understand his motives.
I definitely agree. I'm a big fan of don't show, kind of don't tell, just kind of let the audience make up their own minds about, you know, what's happening, because it's 10 times scarier than anything you can put on the screen.
Well, that's one of my favorite things about classic horror films, is oftentimes we don't see the things that are stalking the characters. I think the original Amityville Horror is a great example, because in the remake, you see everything. And in the original, you see the effects of things, or like the flies and stuff like that. But you don't see, what's her name, Jody, the imaginary friend and or ghost, as it were. And I think that that's a lot more powerful personally, because what I can imagine is a whole lot scarier than what you could show me on screen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the reason I liked the Paranormal Activity, the first one, when that came out, because it just didn't, it let your brain fill in the blanks for you. And that was really, really scary.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite paranormal film that you always go back to? There's a lot of great haunting films or ghost stories and stuff like that, and I'm very, very much into that. So I'm curious, kind of like, what are a few from that, I guess, genre that you're really into?
So the more kind of recent haunting stuff, anything James Wan kind of puts his name to is pretty good for me. He's really good at building the tension before a scare. Then films like The Black Coat's Daughter. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's a bit of an odd one. But again, it's just tense, and doesn't really explain too much about what's going on. I tend to watch a movie every couple of days, so I'm always trying to find new stuff that's exciting and weird. Well, last night I watched Come to Daddy with Elijah Wood.
Oh, that's on my list.
It was without giving too much away, it was really, really good, and it went in directions that I didn't think it was going to go in. But it was kind of a fun roller coaster ride of a movie, and it was pretty funny as well, to be honest.
I really love films that have they really build tension,
yeah,
up to the point of release, and I can tell that that one's going to be one of those films for me that I watch. So I'm really excited about it. I'm curious. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No. It kind of leads you to think it's one type of film, and it does it really well before it kind of pulls the rug from you and just turns into madness.
Great. I'm curious. There's a lot of really great, and I don't know if you've ever gone down this YouTube rabbit hole, but there's a lot of fantastic horror film shorts hanging out on YouTube. Yeah. And that's one of the rabbit holes that I go down a lot. Do you happen to know of any that you're really into or ones you can recommend?
Have you seen Salt? I think it's 2019.
No, I don't think that's on my list.
It's about a minute and a half long. And that's something pretty special. I would thoroughly, thoroughly recommend Salt. I can't remember the names of them. The infamous one with the whatever it is next to the lady in the bed where the phone rings. I can't remember the name of it. And also there's one about fairies as well, which was just gruesome. And I can't remember the name of that one either. But yeah, I tend to kind of get lost in them.
Yeah, I have a few. And just they're such quick to watch that it's easy to just get sucked into watching one after the other, after the other, after the other. So there's a really good one that I had watched, which is obviously goes back to kind of true crime stuff. There's a killer in a small Texas town, and it's set in like the 1970s, and it's about 10 minutes long, but it's got this great kind of story to it and how it unfolds with, you know, a very much Final Girl character. Like the ending is not necessarily what you'd expect, which I really, really liked. Ask kind of, this is normally the last question I ask, but speaking of Final Girls, because it's a topic and a trope that comes up all the time, is there a favorite for you out of all the films that you've seen?
I wouldn't necessarily say Final Girl, but Barbara Crampton is just up there for me. It's just an iconic horror movie actor. There's just something about Barbara Crampton. Whether it's 15-year-old me still talking, I don't know.
And Crampton was in Reanimator, yes? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and From Beyond.
And I remember, obviously, she's very recognizable. I always know who she is when I see her. And she was in Search of Darkness as well. So I'm wondering if she's going to be in the part two, but it's something I have to wait and watch for. So do you collect any like cool horror memorabilia or anything like that? I have a bunch of stuff myself, so I'm curious what you collect.
Yeah, I've got way too much, to be honest. I've got, my living room is filled with figures of horror movie killers and slashers and all sorts of weird masks, and yeah, just strange demons and all sorts of weird stuff. it's kind of, I think it goes with the territory.
Is there anything you do for Halloween in particular? Do you go all out? Do you get dressed up, or just like during the season? What are some kind of interesting things you do in the horror culture subspace?
Well, years ago now, when I was, this was pre kind of making games or anything like that, but I got a dry ice machine. And whenever I opened the door, I was on a skateboard and they couldn't see the skateboard. So dry ice kind of covered the floor and it looked like I was floating, to go and give candy out to the kids. So that was quite funny.
I love that. Well, let's kind of dive into just some, you know, 80s slasher talk. Like, obviously, we love Michael Myers. We love Halloween. Yesterday was John Carpenter's birthday. So there was a lot of talk about all the John Carpenter films. Do you happen to have a favorite John Carpenter film?
The Thing, without a shadow of a doubt. It's The Thing.
Absolutely, I'm right there with you. One of my all-time probably favorite 80s monster movies, and it's this amazing blend of sci-fi and horror, and I love the character of MacReady as well. What's sort of some of your favorite things about the film?
I think it is just a masterclass in tension, and just it constantly builds. You see something pretty gruesome and pretty gross quite quick, and I think you kind of get used to it, but it's the fact that you don't know for sure who it is, and it constantly builds the tension, and then there's a set piece, there's a scare, and then again it kind of starts to build the tension again and again and again. It's a masterclass in fear.
It absolutely is, and I would say that the way it builds up, and this is one of those things where you see the monster right away, but you don't see the monster, right? Because it's this parasite, and you don't know exactly who it is or where it is. And this idea of mimicking a creature that can mimic or take over the body of a host is still so scary, and I wish we actually had more films like that. There are some really great ones. I'm curious, though, how do you feel about the 2011 prequel, I want to say, to The Thing, also called The Thing, which tends to confuse people?
I think it's okay. I think if you treat it as it's kind of, a little homage to The Thing, I think it's okay. The only thing I really did like is they kind of left at the end of The Thing, the 2011 version, they whack an axe into the wall, and that's the axe that's in the start of The Thing, the 1982 version, I think it is. I can't remember the year. But so I like the continuity, but really explaining the monster and things like that, I'm not interested in at all. I don't care that it's, they were looking for a new host or anything like that. I just like the fact that it's this horrendous thing that's lying in wait and waiting specifically for you.
Yeah, one of the things I always forget about The Thing is that because it's there, but it's not something you think about for very long, the whole alien and ice thing. And I wonder about the parasite and the alien and where the creature derives from, or if the reason that this alien ship came down was because a parasite got on board from space or something like that. I don't think the aliens really have anything to do with it, but it's like, oh, hey, there's an alien. We don't really talk about the fact that there's an alien at all throughout the film. But that's aside from there being like a parasite, that's really the only thing that kind of pushes it into the sci-fi realm, is that there's an alien in the film.
I think it's more focused on the kind of the interactions between the humans, really, and the kind of constant paranoia that's going on in that film. It's just superb. I can watch it time and time again and still feel the same way.
Yeah, and I think that the stories, not even the stories, the interactions between the characters, because we don't get a lot of backstory, but think about the idea of being trapped in Antarctica, right, on this expedition, and there's literally nowhere for you to go, and the parasite also makes sure that there are absolutely no exit strategies, so we have no, if I'm remembering it correctly, I'm not remembering what happens at the end in terms of if there's rescue in sight, but I don't want to spoil for anyone if there is, but it's a great film. So if you haven't seen it, The Thing, 1982, John Carpenter, definitely check it out. One of the things I love about Carpenter films is that he does his own composing as well. So there's some of the most amazing scores that I've ever heard that Carpenter has done. And I love the one from Halloween, the original. It's such a it's very like stress inducing. And it really sets the mood right away.
Yeah, definitely. The minute that kind of piano line starts, it's just, you know what you're in for.
Yeah, and it's not a good time. It's a good time if you're a horror fan, not so much if you're in the film. Any other slashers that really top your list? Obviously, we have our slasher characters that are super iconic that everybody knows. But are there any films that really top your list, or characters for you that are outside of that general bundle of iconic characters that everybody knows and loves from the 80s?
To be honest, I kind of constantly revisit those kind of classic 80s slashers. Probably the one that's outside the classic slasher is Hellraiser, is Pinhead, because the kind of body horror side of it is just is something that's so weird, but also the lore of it all. I don't know if you've read the graphic novels, but kind of all the stories that go behind it, there's just so much going on in Hellraiser, and that's another one that I absolutely love.
I haven't read the graphic novels, but as far as comic books go, I have a huge collection of horror graphic novels and horror comic books, because that's really what I stick to. Lots of Ben Temple Smith, and then other things from Tim Seeley. So Hack and Slash is a favorite of mine. Do you happen to collect comic books, graphic novels? Are there any favorites that you have?
I used to in my way, way back. However, I kind of got a bit overzealous with it all and started to get everything I could possibly get. So they've all been given to a better home and other people that will read them way more than I did, rather than just keeping them in a cardboard box.
So I have to say, probably out of 80 slashers, Michael Myers is still my favorite. But there's a lot that you can say about the character of Freddy Krueger and the idea of nightmares and things like that. So what do you think about these three iconic characters as a whole? There's Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Freddy Krueger.
What, who would win?
Oh, yeah, sure. We had Freddy versus Jason. That's a film that I don't want to rewatch personally. But we never put Michael into the ring, unfortunately. Maybe it's because he would win.
I think he would.
What do you think?
I think if Michael Myers came in, that's it. The other two are gone. There's no winning against Michael Myers. And yeah, I think that's kind of testament, even up until the latest film and Halloween Kills. You thought you was dead. Nope, he's still around. It's still happening.
Yeah, I'm very excited for the new films. Halloween 2018 was just a fantastic, I want to call it a reboot of the original films in the franchise. If you take everything out in the middle, which I'm totally okay with for the most part, you get this really great film, and you get it somehow makes it more real. Because when I think of Laurie Strode, she's this very real character who was extremely innocent, and then over time, with all these things that have happened, becomes very flawed, but somehow very strong.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
Despite the paranoia and all this stuff. But I'm super excited for Halloween Kills.
Oh no, Freddy Krueger's got a special place just because of the kind of blend between, or it blurred the lines between horror and kind of one-liners and comedy. It had some, amazingly gruesome kills, which is fantastic, but there's also some of the best one-liners you've ever heard in a horror film. Dream Warriors has got Welcome to Primetime, which is just one of the greatest things ever said in a horror film.
Me personally, Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is my favorite.
Oh, really?
Dream Warriors. Yeah, I like it. As a kid, I really liked it, because there's one particular kill scene, and it's the one in the Roach Motel that just kind of stuck with me. And so for me, it's one of my favorites. But feel free to set me straight, Paul.
No. It's fine. If you like Nightmare on Elm Street 4, I hold no judgment, but 3 is better.
it's definitely okay if you do. This is a good conversation. there's other films from the 80s that I absolutely love. I'm a big fan of The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys has got a special place. Not so much any of the weird sequels or the Frog Brothers stuff or anything like that, but the original Lost Boys is something special.
I think it's fantastic, and still, when I watch it, the you know, master vampire that they're looking for. It's still unexpected, and it was done so well.
Oh, it's brilliant.
And I absolutely love Diane Weiss as the mother in that role. She's just so fantastic. And regardless of the Corys in the film, it's definitely like one of those films that it tops my list because I always go back to it. But I also just love vampires in general. And since you really love werewolves, aside from An American Werewolf in London, are there any other werewolf films that have come out that you would recommend specifically, and why?
In recent times, there really hasn't been any that have kind of, you know, peaked or tried to top American Werewolf in London, although I know they are trying to remake it, or it's in development hell at the moment. But prior to that, or around that same sort of time, there was The Howling, which was really, really good as well. To me, you can't beat American Werewolf in London. The kind of mix of comedy and outright gore, terror, and a guy that is just genuinely afraid of what he's able to do now. I think it's just one of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I was watching In Search of Darkness, they had mentioned there's a lot of contention between The Howling and An American Werewolf in London, because for whatever reason they were released in the same year.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were meant to compete with each other or, you know, what the idea was behind that. But I guess if you're comparing the two, do you still feel that the werewolf, because you see both of them in each film, the werewolf in An American Werewolf in London is better than the werewolf in The Howling? Because that's a point of contention.
I think the werewolf in American Werewolf in London is better purely because you sympathize with the guy that's kind of behind the werewolf, rather than it's just a scary werewolf. You know, the guy is just terrified kind of inside, because you've spent so much time with him before he becomes, you know, this stalking furry monster.
Let's jump into some other slasher films that maybe aren't from the 80s. Do you have a favorite from the 90s? And I feel like I probably know what it's going to be, but tell me.
I don't know, to be honest. I really, really like Candyman. That was 90s, wasn't it? Or am I getting that wrong?
Yes. 1992, I believe.
Yeah, I think it
91
was.
Or 92.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for Candyman that's going to be releasing in 2021. And this film is directed by Nia DaCosta, and it's actually written by Jordan Peele. It's also written by DaCosta and Wynn Rosenfeld. So there's a couple different writers on the film. And then I believe that Peele and Ian Cooper and Rosenfeld are also producing the film. So I'm really I couldn't be more excited for the new Candyman, which I believe is going to be, I think, a sequel to the original film. Yes, it's a direct sequel to the 1992 film.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah. I think it was one of those that kind of reset the guidelines on slashers. Obviously in the 80s everything became how gory we could get, how disgusting we could be, how much can we get away with, and kind of forgot the fear element or the kind of supernatural spookiness element of it. Not so much with Halloween, but definitely with obviously Friday the 13th and Freddy. But Candyman kind of came out and it was very straight down the line with regards to kind of it's not trying to be funny. There are still funny bits in it, but it's a brand new type of kind of supernatural villain that you haven't seen before, and he is nasty.
Yeah, speaking of killers with hooks, I want to know how you feel about I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is more from I think that's still 1998.
I think the story always has to kind of be there. It's the thing that kind of hooks you, isn't it, with the killer? Yeah. Excuse the pun, it's the thing that kind of makes you understand the killer and kind of get involved with the backstory. So yeah, there was that, and there was Urban Legend as well around the same time, and yeah, both of those. I Know What You Did Last Summer is a great piece of film. is kind of a different way to do the slasher. You know, it's kind of, you know, on the screen kind of side of things. But yeah, that and What You Did Last Summer, super films.
It holds up. I for some reason, when I recollected it before rewatching it, I was like, oh, I remember it being kind of cheesy. And, you know, it's got all those actors that were really popular at the time for various reasons. And I would say in terms of like some of the acting, there is some kind of cheesiness to it. But like at the end of the day, the film itself was really, really good and really well done. I like some of these adaptations of horror stories that can be brought into television series. It just depends. It can go very right or it can go very wrong. Paul, I don't know if you have watched any of these or if you have a favorite horror television series by chance.
I think the most recent one, I didn't watch it when it was first aired, but Candle Cove, or what's it actually called? The first series is called Candle Cove. It's got the monster in it that's made of teeth. I can't remember the name of it, but that was something quite special, quite weird, kind of mixed with Silent Hill. It was yeah, it was pretty gruesome. But those kind of I'm a huge fan of Twin Peaks. So Twin Peaks to me is one of the greatest things ever made. So nothing can kind of beat it, and I constantly go back to it.
I actually haven't heard of Candle Cove. I'm like, where did it air? I'm assuming in the...
I'm going to Google it because I cannot remember.
I looked up Candle Cove and it gave me a creepypasta.
Yeah, there's a TV series, and it might have been called Candle Cove. I can't remember now. But
there's a TV series called Channel Zero.
That's it, Channel Zero, and the first series was called Candle Cove.
I'm checking this out because it looks like it's on YouTube now at this point.
Yeah, there's various bits. It's one of those TV series that's very, very slow, and kind of lots of just slightly odd things happen before it kind of ramps up. So it's not outright scary, it's just a bit weird. And I really enjoyed that one. I think TV series, I like them to be weird. I think that's why I like Twin Peaks so much, is that it's just strange.
Yeah, and it's funny because there's continuity in Twin Peaks, but at the same time, I'm just like, wait a minute, what is happening at this point? But I still like it, and I still go back to it, and I absolutely love... part of the reason I'm so nostalgic for it is because I'm from the Pacific Northwest, right? And it was actually shot near me, the hotel... is about a 45-minute drive from
here. Wow, nice.
So I go up there and I'm like, yeah, there it is, and I get the Twin Peaks vibes every single time.
I'm jealous. I'm really jealous.
And I did actually watch it's one of the standalone things that they have for Twin Peaks. I think it's
Firewalk with Me.
That's... I was like, it's fire something. I'm trying to remember. So I watched Firewalk with Me more recently. And then I'm rewatching Twin Peaks now. Did you watch the newer episodes of Twin Peaks?
I watched them within seconds of them airing, because yeah, it was a thing, and it's still remains one of the greatest returns to television that I've ever seen. It did everything that I wanted it to do.
Well, it's exciting for me because it's something that's in my backlog that I actually haven't watched yet. I haven't returned to it.
So good. I can't tell you how good it is. It's so good.
Super high praise. So definitely. Okay, we'll move it up in the backlog and watch it sooner than later.
Yeah, dude.
We can jump into, I think, as we move into like the 2000s horror films, we started to see a lot more remakes. And yep. I think that original ideas started to get very muddled. However, we also got Saw out of 2004.
We did. Yeah. 2004. That was a fantastic piece of film.
That twist at the end, still super brilliant. And I don't like the rest of the films in the franchise, although Jigsaw was not terrible, but
no, Jigsaw was all right.
I'm not particularly a fan of like gore for the sake of gore. I like gore to have a very like specific purpose. I'm not really into the shock and awe horror films. But I thought the original Saw, it was all very purposeful and it all looked really good. And then obviously for me, seeing Carrie Elwes come back to the screen in that role was really interesting because I hadn't seen a lot from him since like The Princess Bride.
Definitely.
So it was exciting to see him in that role. And for me, I unfortunately was thinking about The Princess Bride a lot while I'm watching him just on screen. Being like, oh my God. So there's a lot of things about that that's also really terrifying and probably speaks to our own fears about, you know, being abducted and tortured and like, why is this happening? And the backstory behind it is actually really interesting. And what you find out is it's actually a revenge horror film.
Absolutely.
But definitely a really, really good one. And there's some other really great revenge horror films out there. I don't know if you have any particular favorites.
To me, it's kind of, if we're going like 2000s, I think that's where I kind of got far more paranormal, far more ghostly, with obviously Paranormal Activity coming out in the 2000s as well.
There's really some great paranormal films or things. I kind of move more into stuff that's more on the demonic side of things. So like, I'm a huge fan of The Exorcist. The Omen is one of my absolute favorite films and the score is incredible. And for me in the 2000s, I went more into like, there's some great indie horror films. And I moved more into that. There's a couple of indie horror films, The House of the Devil, The Innkeepers. The Innkeepers is more like ghost story stuff. And even Hell House LLC was
Hell House was superb.
And when you're looking at it, you don't expect it to be because it's got. Well, I think if you're just looking at movie covers as you're digitally scrolling through, you look at it and you're like, "This is probably horrible."
So. No, you can tell the love that they had while they were kind of making that film. It's fantastic.
I did also watch the first sequel, but I haven't watched the third one. And oddly enough, Hell House LLC 2, it's actually good as well. So if you haven't watched it, I'd recommend it.
No, I don't think I have watched 2, actually, but I think it's on my list. I think one of the strangest ones I can remember, I don't know if you've seen it, is May, M-A-Y. I can't remember the year. It's definitely in the 2000s, but it's very, very strange about a girl with a very odd obsession. I can't really say any more than giving it away, but it's brilliant.
It's something that's been on my list for a really long time, and I just haven't gotten around to watching it. I hate to say, I do this a lot where I spend more time putting things in my watch list than I do watching them sometimes.
I spend hours finding new stuff to add to the list.
There's so much stuff on the list, and then I'm like, I hope that hasn't left Netflix by now because I haven't gotten around to it yet because I put it on my list like 3 years ago or something like that. I know I was going to ask Paul because I know we're getting to the hour here, but I wanted to ask, like, speaking of true crime, I want to hear more about your true crime obsession. The amount of time we spend talking to each other about serial killers and murder, other people would probably be creeped out by us, but I'd love to hear more
your obsession with it. Yeah, if you saw my podcast queue and my YouTube queue, I think, I'd be in the same boat. People would be very worried or concerned.
Yeah, I mean, Spree's a good example, and I don't want to jump too much into it, but, like, that was inspired by a true crime. And there's a lot of films and horror that are inspired by true crimes. So I'm curious, do you happen to know of a horror film, you know, that is kind of at the top of your list that actually is inspired by a true crime story?
In kind of more recent art, I've been kind of more focused on, like, the documentaries. Like, Netflix seems to be doing a really, really good job of kind of doing, you know, the behind the scenes of true crime stuff. So I don't know if you've seen, like, the one that I've gone back to a couple of times is Don't Fuck With Cats.
It's so good. Oh, my God. Don't Fuck With Cats is like, Don't Fuck With Cats was amazing. And there's actually something I'm watching right now on Hulu called A Crime to Remember. And it's a series of true crime stories. And it's got, they do the retelling. Like, there's actually, like, actors that come in and do the retelling. And it's super interesting. And it's about these like crimes throughout history. And it's so, so good. So I would recommend that. And I, one thing I just put in my list that Netflix came out with was Night Stalker, about the killings in Los Angeles. Wait, don't tell me anything.
I'm on the last episode of Night Stalker now.
I haven't started watching it yet because I know I'm going to binge it. And I, when you know you're going to be glued to your television for like hours at a time, you kind of got to wait to do it. I also finally finished Making a Murderer parts 1 and 2.
And
now I'm just obsessed with finding out what's going to happen next because it ended around 2017, 2018 with the part 2. So I'm very curious.
Have you seen The Jinx yet?
No, I have not. Tell me more.
You've not seen The Jinx yet?
No.
That, out of all of them, if you ever watch a murder documentary or a murder documentary series, The Jinx, The Life and Times of Robert Durst, I think the full title is one of the greatest true crime documentaries you will ever see. I can't say any more other than he definitely did.
I'm looking right now and okay, cool. On HBO, I'll put it on my list. The other thing on HBO that came out this year was I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's an interesting story, obviously, with Michelle McNamara passing away in the middle of writing the book. And I would really like to go and actually read the book. It's not something I've read, but I've read some of her true crime blog.
The book is extremely personal, mm-hmm. And kind of just intertwines the whole, the Erons and also kind of her life as well.
Yeah, those are definitely a couple of things that I always go back to, but it's interesting to hear the stories behind true crime and a lot of the things that happen. It's not so much that we're, I think a lot of the attention gets paid to the killers themselves, but it's really interesting to actually get to go and hear the stories of the victims. And I think that one of the things that I like most about I'll Be Gone in the Dark is you've heard from that perspective a lot over time. And it wasn't really about the perpetrator.
I think that's the thing. It's more the kind of procedure behind it all. The fascinating breaks and the strange coincidences that happen in order for, the police to be in the right place at the right time and discover the right thing that leads it to kind of end it all.
Well, it's interesting for the time period because there was a lot of, we think of crime having peaked during this time period where we didn't have, DNA evidence and things like this. And there's all these crimes that are still unsolved and cold that brought up now. Cold Case Files is something I'm addicted to. I watch a lot of that stuff. So, it's just fascinating to me. And I think that's part of why I love true crime as much as I love horror films, and especially when horror films are inspired by true crime stories. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're coming up to that hour mark, and I just wanted to say thank you again so much, Paul, for coming to join me around the campfire, my virtual campfire, to talk about Fossil Games and Camp Sunshine and Sunshine Manor and just talk about horror movies with me. It's been really amazing and fun, and I hope to have you back again soon, especially as we get closer to Sunshine Manor coming out in October. So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And everyone, please make sure that you go and check out Camp Sunshine, which you can definitely find right now on Steam. Sure to give it a playthrough. Even if you're not a horror fan, I promise you're gonna love it. I'm giving you my rave review. Thanks for slaying away with us. Until next time, stay spooky.
Thank you.
Hey Slayers, did you enjoy that episode? If you like the podcast, we encourage you to head over to Podchaser and leave us a review. The best part is it helps put Slay Away in the hands of more horror fans.